Louis Armstrong was an unlikely candidate to revolutionize the art of jazz and popular singing. As the world celebrates the centennial of his birth, you can't see his picture without hearing his voice.
Lottie Lanier, Sweet Lucy Brown, all the line forms on the right, dear. Now that Mackie's back in town.
Take it, Satch.
Why was he so special? His memorable voice and his unequaled phrasing influenced everyone, from Billie Holiday to Bing Crosby, from Ella Fitzgerald to Mel Tormé. We all learned something wonderful from Louis Armstrong. I'm Nancy Wilson, inviting you to join Stanley Crouch for a special edition of Jazz Profiles, The Wonderful World of Louis Armstrong. On this show, it's Armstrong the Singer.
Hello, Dolly. This is Louis. Dolly, it's so nice to have you back where you belong.
Louis Armstrong's name is largely associated with the trumpet. But what about his singing? It has sparked a wide range of reactions from ridicule to reverence.
I forget who it was that once said that Louis Armstrong was the greatest singer in the world without a voice. And he was.
Frank Sinatra, Billie Holiday, absolutely everybody who ever sang in the pop and jazz medium said at one time or another that they learned their craft by listening to Armstrong.
Louis could play the New York telephone directory and it would come out magnificent.
Nobody else had that kind of a voice. You would never say, oh, was that Louis Armstrong or somebody else? Nobody ever said that.
The pale moon shining on the fields below. The folks are crooning something low. You didn't tell me, boy, because I know, yes. When it's sleepy time down south, yes, the south wind blowing.
It seems to be one of the 20th century's great musical paradoxes. How could someone with an untrained voice, a voice with limited range and a gravelly quality, have such a profound effect on the course of American jazz and popular singing? Bing Crosby said, Louis is the beginning and the end of music in America. Tony Bennett states that every great American popular singer, from Billie Holiday to Frank Sinatra, has consciously learned something from Louis Armstrong.
Good evening, everybody.
I'm Stanley Crouch, welcoming you to the wonderful world of Louis Armstrong. On this show, we'll unravel the secret of Louis's journey to becoming one of the most important and enduring voices of the century. It's Louis Armstrong, the singer. For many reasons, Louis Armstrong is the single most influential person in jazz. Dan Morgenstern is director of the Institute of Jazz Studies at Rutgers University.
Well, Armstrong's singing has been described as, you know, the mirror image of his trumpet playing. The way he phrases when he sings is also the way he phrases when he plays.
My days have grown so lonely. I have lost the one and only. My pride has been humbled, for I'm heart, body, and soul. Oh, babe, I was a mere sensation, babe. My house of God had no foundation, although it has tumbled. I still am her body and soul. What lies before me, the future's stormy. Winter that's gray and old. Unless there's magic,
the end will be tragic and echo the tale that's been told so often. My life revolves about her. What earthly good am I without her? My castle crumbles. I'm her body and soul.
Although much has been written about Lewis's earliest experiences with the cornet, there is evidence that his singing predates this. Dan Morgenstern.
Louis, as a young kid, long before the Waif's Home incident, organized a quartet to sing in the streets for pennies. He was in constant need of money, of course, because things were very bad at home, and he wanted to contribute.
Armstrong's friend and colleague, drummer Zutty Singleton, recalls Louis performing in knee pants and singing with a group called the Singing Fools.
They had a quartet that used to harmonize back. I used to see Louis all the time. He was in short trousers then. They'd have those amateur nights at these tent shows, you know, and they'd come and they'd sing, and oh man, it was great. Sure was. Boy, old Louis sure could sing, man.
A lot of people, they think jazz music is just blowing a whole lot of notes loud and things like that. Now, yes, Basin Street, I must have recorded a half a dozen ways. Now, the boys was harmonizing, and I was just singing pretty notes with their harmony, see? Another record I might sit saying, Bordeaux did Bordeaux, Basin Street is street, same tempo, the same, where the folks all meet, you know what I mean? That's right there. Jazz can be played just as pretty as it can be played loud.
Although the Hot 5 and Hot 7 records of the mid to late 20s are best remembered for Armstrong's brilliant cornet work, it is the haunting, wordless vocal on West End Blues from June of 1928 that gives the first glimpse of the delicate nature of Lewis's voice in the mid-20s. Lawrence Berggren, author of Louis Armstrong, An Extravagant Life.
We tend to think of him as Louis Armstrong in later life, growling, very low voice. But he, when he was younger, often had a light, lilting tenor. People have asked me, you know, how did Louis get that low, growling, froggy voice? His sister had the same kind of voice. So I think that it was part of his family and or genetic inheritance. He said that when he was on the riverboats performing with Fate Marable, he caught some sort of a grip, cold, something. And after he recovered from that, his voice changed and deepened. And who knows? I mean, there's no way to really tell. But he attributed it to getting sick on the riverboat, and that was why his voice was so low. But, you know, his sister probably didn't get sick the same way, and her voice was also very low.
Some of the great influences that would contribute to Armstrong's unique vocal interpretive genius were all around him as he grew up in New Orleans. The Black and Creole brass bands, the church music, and When Lewis bought his first phonograph in 1918 and began listening to Irish tenor John McCormick and the great Italian tenor Enrico Caruso. Yet another early and important influence on Lewis's conception of vocal music was his association with the Karnofsky family in New Orleans beginning in 1909. He worked for them assisting in their junk peddling business. It was his first exposure to Jewish culture.
Every night you'll hear her croon a Russian lullaby.
That was also an early exposure to singing with him, because they would sing both Russian folk songs, Yiddish or Jewish folk songs, and American songs with him.
Louis speaks very movingly of often having dinner with the Karnofsky family and how the mother would sing lullaby to kids. And what he actually sings is Russian lullaby.
Dan Morgenstern.
Later on, Harold Arlen, who actually wrote songs that were recorded by Louis, such as World on a String, which Louis did a marvelous job on, and I Got a Right to Sing the Blues, played some Armstrong records for his father, who was a cantor. His father listened and he said, "Where did he get my stuff from?" So we see that there was definitely a Jewish connection in Louis' musical life.
I got a right to sing the blues. I got a right to feel low down. I got a right to hang around down among the river. A certain gal in this old town keeps dragging my poor heart around. Babe, all I see from me is misery. Oh, I got a right to moan and sigh, got a right to sit and cry down the river. Oh, babe, I know the deep blue sea will soon be calling me. It must be love, say what you choose.
I'm Stanley Crouch with a look into the world of Louis Armstrong, the singer, on this very special edition of NPR's Jazz Profiles. Louis was eager to develop his singing by the time he joined Fletcher Henderson's orchestra in New York in 1924, but he was frustrated by Henderson's indifference.
Fletcher had a great band, one of the first big bands, colored bands, that hit the road. But he would never give, okay, how good you were, he wouldn't give you over 16 bars to save your life. In those days, I just come from singing in a quartet. Of course, I wasn't singing on records, and Joe missed it too. He never, you know, figured over you a trumpet player. Youngsters, and I said, "Fletcher, let me sing on a record called da 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 da. Everybody love my baby," and I was wailing up and hollering. I was, "No, you can't sing on this, man." I was okay, and all he would say, "If you're gonna be good someday, you take some lessons."
By the spring of 1925, Louis was providing background work for some of the best female blues singers of the 1920s, including Ma Rainey, Clara Smith, Alberta Hunter, and the grand diva of the blues, Bessie Smith.
There's a tune here, St. Louis Blues, which I always keep on my files and all my tapes, by Bessie Smith. I think she's one of the greatest the madam of the blues that we're going to get for generations to come. And it's too bad she didn't live a little longer so the younger generation couldn't at least heard her in person, you know? But her records will stand up forever.
Lewis made his first recordings as a leader of his own group called the Hot Fives and Hot Sevens on November 12, 1925. They would produce 65 recordings for OK Records, a body of work that continues to astound listeners all over the world. When the group returned to the studio for their second session in February of 1926, Lewis started making history as a vocalist.
There was a lot of scatting in this record. It was done accidentally. You know, we call scat, that's where you run into notes like an instrument. You like the heebies, jeebies, and it's whole skeet, scat, do they do, do that, anything in the music, see? Well, that's because I dropped that paper with the lyrics on it. So I started to stop, and Mr. Vaughan, who was the president of the OK Record, he always was around. He kept on saying, keep on. And when the record was over, Mr. Vaughan, he came out of the control booth and said, Lou Armstrong, this is where scat was born, see?
What Lewis did on the Heebie-Jeebies recording in February of 1926 would echo throughout the century through the voices of others like Bing Crosby. The wonderful First Lady of Song, Ella Fitzgerald. Mel Torme. The Divine One, Sarah Vaughan. Saddle your bop, seal your bop, shoe your bop, shoe your bop, shoe be doo boo. And Louis Armstrong, the singer, raised scat singing to an art form. By 1929, Louis Armstrong was finally beginning to have a major impact on singing. On March 5th, he also recorded his first crossover hit, I Can't Give You Anything But Love. The hit got the attention of Louis's mentor, Joe King Oliver.
There's a tune here called I Can't Give Anything But Love. It was recorded in 1929. You see, J.C. Hickenbottom was on the trombone at that time, and he was in prime, too. And I'll never forget it. It's the last time Joe Oliver probably heard me play. And the man just stood up and cried. He hadn't seen me for years. He had been in New York. So he came up, and he stood right across from the bandstand. And that's where he stood. And he could see all the moments when I was a kid running errands for his wife. And he'd give me those lessons, you know. And we'd eat red beans and rice together, you know. I'll never forget it.
I can't give you anything but love. Baby, that's the only thing I'm plenty of. Baby, dream my wild, scheme my wild, baby. You should do that. By love, by love, by love, all happiness. And I grant all the things that you have probably do. Gee, I'd like to see you looking swell for baby. Baby, let me blow. Diamond bracelet. Woodward does not sell. My little baby don't know. Tell that lucky day. Your lucky day, you know darn well. Baby, baby, I can't give you anything but love.
1929 was also the year that Lewis made his Broadway debut in the show Hot Chocolates. On July 19th, he recorded his big number in the show, written by Fats Waller and Andy Razzaf.
No one to talk with, all by myself. No one to walk with, I'm happy on the show, babe. Ain't misbehaving, I'm saving my love. Oh, baby, love you, really, baby, love you. I know it's saying, one I love, through it flirting. You that I'm thinking of ain't misbehaving. I'm saving my love. Oh, baby, my love for you. Jackie Horner, in our corner, don't go nowhere. And I don't care all your kisses weren't waiting for me. Daddy, 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 I don't stay out late, don't care to go. I'm home about eight, me and my radio, babe. Ain't misbehaving, saving all my love for you.
Armstrong was evolving into a major force in entertainment, and Bing Crosby would soon be one of the many singers to fall under the Armstrong spell. This and much more is ahead as we continue our look at Louis Armstrong, the singer. I'm Stanley Crouch. You are listening to a very special edition of Jazz Profiles, The Wonderful World of Louis Armstrong. By 1929, Louis Armstrong had established himself as a major force as a singer. This new Armstrong, this 1929 Armstrong, was evolving. And, as Armstrong confidant and friend Jack Bradley explains, not all of his fans embraced his new persona.
Of course, there's those purists that put down Louis for going, quote, commercial, unquote, after the Hot Five and Hot Sevens, because with I Can't Give You Anything But Love, I believe that was the first pop tune he recorded, and he gained a much wider audience. And who cares what tune Louis played? It all came out magnificent. In jazz, the tune is secondary, because it's what you do with the tune. Louis could play the New York telephone directory and it would come out magnificent.
Old empty bed, spring horn has led, feel like old Ned, wish I was dead. All my life through, I've been so black and blue. Even the mouse ran from my house. They laugh at you and scorn you too. What did I do, man, to be so black and blue? Oh, I'm white inside, but that don't help my case. Cause I can't hide. What is in my bed?
It was around 1929 that singer Bing Crosby fell under the Armstrong spell. Will Friedwald, author of Jazz Singing.
And they call it D-I-X-I-E, Hyphenelli, Candyland.
From Louis and his relationship with Bing Crosby, that's basically where all popular singing comes from, because it was Crosby realizing that here was a way to personalize the popular song, to sing it naturally, and also to make it adaptable for the new technology that was coming around. So basically all this stuff, even going up through rock and roll, can be traced back to Armstrong.
Bing Crosby, who helped engineer Louis's entree into bigger and better roles in Hollywood, always considered Armstrong a great artist.
He had such spirit, such He played joyfully, you know, with a great uplift. In a style that, although there's been a lot of people that can imitate him, they never quite capture what he had on that instrument. Plus his singing and his personality.
Hey, Pops, you want to grab a little of what's left here?
Yeah, Daddy, yeah.
Here we go. If you sail,
I sailing
over the sea.
When you wait for me,
take my tip, they're all mold of hip in Italy.
Well, Alvaraduce, as for France,
oh, I know you're very big there.
Yes, believe it or not,
I do believe, I do indeed.
The Frenchmen's all prefer what they call leges high.
Phone me down, take a plane.
Oh, Barbadozat,
go to Siam.
Baba,
in Bangkok today, round the clock, well, they all like to jam.
The
Indians on,
oh,
the Amazon,
oh,
beat one bar and all of them are,
oh, well, gone, man, gone.
From the equator up to the pole.
By 1930, only 8 years after Joe King Oliver had summoned him to Chicago, Louis Armstrong had become one of the world's most popular singers. Dan Morgenstern.
From 1929 on, Armstrong's repertory definitely became one of what later turned into standards, because he launched probably more evergreens to be wonderful recordings, like the ones he made of Hoagy Carmichael's Stardust, which had just been equipped with a lyric by Mitchell Parrish about a year before Louis recorded it.
Sometimes I wonder why I spend such lonely nights. Oh, baby, lonely nights. Dreaming of a song, melody, memory. And I'm once again with you. When our love was new, oh, man. Each kiss an inspiration. Now that, baby, you know, long ago. Beside a garden wall, when stars are bright and you are in my arms, baby, the nightingale tells his fairy tale of paradise where roses grow. Though I dream in vain, oh, in my heart it will remain, baby, my stardust melody.
There were two takes of it. The second is the rarer one, and you can distinguish it by the vocal, because at the end of that take, Louis sings, "Oh memory, oh memory." That's the end of the vocal. And Hoagy Carmichael himself was looking for that second master, and he was so happy when he found it.
Stardust had a profound effect on singer John Hendricks.
With what proper singers would call no real instrument, that man could sing and put more feeling and emotion into one note than most singers put in a whole 32-bar song. Well, you know, the first 9 or 10 notes that he sang are all the same note.
Sometimes I wonder why I spend such lonely nights. Oh, babe, dreaming of a song.
That's when he changed.
This cat sing one note, and it's always interesting, you know, and each one is amazing.
Armstrong had great success introducing many compositions by Hoagy Carmichael. Louis met Carmichael through their mutual friend and admirer, Bix Beiderbecke. Dan Morgenstern.
Hoagy Carmichael hooks up with him. Hoagy was a great admirer of Louis from the King Oliver Lincoln Garden days. And they do Rockin' Chair together. This is the first time it gets recorded. And this is a duet between a black man and a white man, which is also the first time on record that that would ever have happened.
Rockin' chair got me, son.
Oh, rock chair got you, father.
My cane laying by my side.
Cane by your side.
Fetch me that gin, son.
ain't got no gin for no.
Boy, can you hide now?
You gonna turn my heart.
I can't get from this cabin.
What cabin choking?
I ain't going nowhere.
You ain't going nowhere.
Just let me here grabbing.
Grabbing?
Grabbing the flies around this rocking chair.
Rocking chair.
My dear old Aunt Harriet.
Lewis the singer was everywhere. Records, jukeboxes, radio, movies, and concerts. And like producer George Avakian, the public was discovering another facet of the Armstrong genius.
I certainly began to realize that Armstrong was a great singer. Sometimes he wanders away from the melody very deliberately. But he injected heart, soul into a song. And the way he treated the sound of his voice as underlining of the expression of the words of the song was something that was unique. Nobody had ever done anything remotely like it.
Singer Billy Eckstein remembers hearing Lewis at this point in his career.
I forget who it was that once said that Louis Armstrong was the greatest singer in the world without a voice. And he was. What Louis did to a song, nobody else could do. And you could feel what he was doing. And if you look at the technical aspects of what a voice consists of, Louis had none of those qualities.
Oh, do, but do. They go marching through. All the sweethearts on parade, parade, parade. Can't have cried as they pass me by. All the sweethearts hearts on parade, on parade.
Another aspect of Armstrong's genius was revealed by the late 40s. And the numerous popular hits that he made in a diverse range of circumstances. Some of them pleased him, and some of them did not. On Blueberry Hill, Lewis worked with arranger, conductor, Gordon Jenkins.
I found my thrill on Blueberry Hill. On Blueberry Hill. When I found you.
It was summertime, 1951.
Now here's a tune that knocks me out that I made in the picture with the little movie star Mickey Rooney. The title is Kiss the Bella Dream On. Dig it.
Give me a kiss the Bella Dream On. And my imagination will thrive upon that kiss. Sweetheart, I ask no more than this, a kiss the bell, a dream on.
In New York City, on October 22nd, 1953, Lewis covered an Ink Spots tune and made it a hit all over again.
In a quaint caravan, there's a lady they call the Gypsy.
Milt Gabler produced that session for Decca.
Louis loved the tune, he loved the lyric content, and he just loved to play it. It wasn't a hit single record for him. He loved to sing, and he loved to do ballads, and the sadder the song, the better.
She can tell at a glance that your heart's full of love. Look in my hand and told me my lover was always true. But deep in my heart, I know, dear, somebody else is kissing you.
Surprisingly, not everyone understood what was happening. Critics and fellow musicians weren't as receptive to his hits as the public was. Gary Giddens.
People were upset by him. They did not know what to make of him. To me, the secret of Louis Armstrong is that he considered art and entertainment almost indivisible. The level of his entertainment achieved art, but he never wanted to create an art that wasn't entertaining.
Louis was aware and was sensitive to the criticism and to the direction in which he was going.
I used to go to this company that I record with, and I used to tell them, I said, well, man, why don't you just turn us loose in the studio here and let us wail, you know? He said, well, that's a good idea. I said, it's a very good idea. If them people listen to our concerts and give us thunderous applause over these tunes we play, you know they would like to have it in their files. So why don't you just let us record these things? That's nice, but we got a few pop tunes here. I think it's going to be on the hit parade, blah, blah, blah. And that's when you look around, people wonder, what happened to Louis Armstrong?
Oh, there won't be another to treat you like a brother. Oh, someday you'll be sorry.
I'm Stanley Crouch with a look into the world of Louis Armstrong, the singer, on this special edition of NPR's Jazz Profiles. Finally, in the summer of 1954, Armstrong would find a recording producer who allowed Louis Armstrong to be himself. That producer was George Avakian, who conceptualized an Armstrong tribute to the father of the blues, William Christopher W.C. Handy.
What I wanted to do was get Louis to record certain ideas which fit his own early life and the development of jazz. When an opportunity came along between contracts, I signed him specifically to start recording material like the music of W.C. Handy.
You'll see pretty browns in beautiful gowns. You see tailor-mades and hand-me-downs. You meet honest men and pickpocket skill. You'll find that business never closes till somebody gets killed. If Beale Street could talk, if Beale Street could talk, married men would have to take their beds in war, except one or two who never drink booze, and the blind man on the corner who sings the Beale Street Blues. He said.
Soon after the Avakian sessions, Louis would find yet another setting to demonstrate his vocal supremacy. Gary Giddens.
Then you start listening to those records that he made for Verve back in the 50s with Ella and with Oscar Peterson. Listen to him sing Cole Porter. Did anybody ever sing Cole Porter with a greater sense of what the lyric means?
And that's why birds do it. Bees do it. Even educated fleas do it. Let's do it. Let's fall in love.
He's completely on top of it. I think it's very easy for people to see Armstrong in one way and then to completely underestimate how sophisticated, in the best sense of that word, that he is. He always understands the lyric.
Lithuanians, and let's do it. Let's do it. Mama, let's fall in love.
In 1961, Louis Armstrong was the centerpiece for Dave and Iola Brubeck's ambitious concept album, The Real Ambassadors, a tribute to Armstrong, which celebrated his distinction of being an American musical ambassador without portfolio. Participating in the project, among others, were Carmen McRae, the Brubecks, and Lambert, Hendrix, and Ross. John Hendrix.
You know, we're dealing here with spirit. We're dealing with the secular version of spiritual music. When you're dealing with spirit, there are no words. Words are clumsy. They becloud more than they enlighten spiritual subjects, you know. Louis Armstrong is spirit itself, you know. So it's very, very hard to put what he does into words, but you feel it in your heart and you feel it in every part of your body. and he makes you tingle. You start laughing, and nobody's told a joke, but he just arouses all those basic things in you, and it's all sweet, and it's all good.
Dan Morgenstern remembers being at the 1961 recording session of The Real Ambassadors.
I was fortunate to be at one session where Brubeck presented Louis with Summer's Song, which is a lovely piece of music. He sang it so movingly that tears came to Dave's eyes. He couldn't believe how quickly and how perfectly he had zeroed in on that.
Love to me is like a summer day, silent cause there's just too much to say. Still and warm and peaceful, even clouds that may drift by can't disturb our summer sky. I'll take summer, that's my time of year. Winter's shadow seems to disappear. Gayest, warmest season, that's the reason I can say that I love a summer day. I hear laughter.
Composer Dave Brubeck spoke with Marion McPartney about a special moment hearing Armstrong's record, Summer Song, on July 6, 1971.
The day that Louis died, they played that on the radio, on the classical station.
Really?
And Louis happened to like this tune very much. And in my studio, I have the original manuscript to it, and he said, Mrs. Brubeck, I'm very happy. Satchmo Louis Armstrong.
It's like a summer day. If it ends, the memories will stay. Still and warm and peaceful. Now the days are getting long. I can sing my summer song.
Trumpeter Joe Wilder.
What a wonderful world. That's something that I hope people are aware of with Louis. He was a very sensitive man, had wonderful feeling for people. I got really so touched by the way he did it. And it's almost like a hymn. This is something that Louis left, that no matter what we do, we never erase the beauty of it, you know.
Some of you young folks been saying to me, hey, Pops, what you mean? What a wonderful world. How about all them wars all over the place? You call them wonderful? And how about hunger and pollution? They ain't so wonderful either. But how about listening to old Pops for a minute? Seems to me it ain't the world that's so bad, but what we are doing to it. And all I'm saying and see what a wonderful world it would be if only we'd give it a chance. Love, baby, love. That's the secret. Yeah. If lots more of us loved each other, we'd solve lots more problems. And man.
He was just tremendous in his understanding of lyrics, as you can hear in his singing some songs. And he played that way, too. There was a whole lot of heart and a tremendous amount of sincerity.
I see trees of green, red roses, too. I see them bloom for me and you. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world. I see skies of blue and clouds of white, the bright blessed days, dark sacred night. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world.
the colors of the rainbow.
Louis Armstrong, the singer. Joe King Oliver and Fletcher Henderson didn't hear it in the 1920s. But because of Louis Armstrong's belief in himself, almost 30 years after his death, his voice remains one of the most recognizable in the world, a constant source of joy and inspiration. Throughout his life, Louis Armstrong's singing was a mirror of his trumpet playing. At the end of his life, when he had to put down the trumpet for good, his voice, however, remained a loyal friend, and it extended his career. His wonderful voice will remain one of the most unique and influential treasures of American life during the 20th century. I'm Stanley Crouch. I'll see you next time on The Wonderful World of Louis Armstrong.
Louis Armstrong, the singer, was written and produced by Dick Golden, technical director Duke Marcos. We'd also like to thank the Institute of Jazz Studies at Rutgers University in Newark, the Hogan Archives at Tulane University in New Orleans, Marion McPartland's Piano Jazz, Gary Giddens, Jack Bradley, the BBC, and WBGO Newark. The executive producer of The Wonderful World of Louis Armstrong is Jim Luce. The executive producer for Jazz Profiles is Tim Owens, assistant producer Madeline Smith. To email us, or for more information about this program and others in our series, contact us through NPR's homepage on the World Wide Web at npr.org. That's npr.org. Major support for this special edition of Jazz Profiles comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the National Endowment for the Arts, and the Lila Wallace Reader's Digest Fund, helping people to make the arts and culture an active part of their everyday lives. Additional support has been provided by Oris, Swiss watches since 1904, on the web at www.oris.ch, and by Carry Audio Design, makers of high-end audio equipment for the home, on the web at www.carryaudio.com. Take it, Satch. The Wonderful World of Louis Armstrong is produced by the Luce Group and National Public Radio, in association with WRTI-FM Philadelphia, as part of the Louis Armstrong Centennial Radio Project. I'm Nancy Wilson. This is NPR, National Public Radio.
Thanks for listening. To hear more programs in this series, go to npr.org/jazzprofiles.